I'm an alcoholic. My name is Damien.
Damien.
Hello, everyone. My sobriety date is August 28th, 2012. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor who has a sponsor. I have a home group. It's called Sobriety on State and Date. We still meet on Zoom, so I expect to see people there. You can get the information from Layla after the meeting. And I've had an experience as the result of taking the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and trying to continue to work and practice and live the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I haven't been thirsty for a drink in almost 10 years, over 9 years. And thank yous. Completely a result of just coming here broken and being willing to do the things that people do here. You know, I can't take too much credit. The biggest gift that I've gotten, or as I've been sober longer, I realized how much of a gift it was that I came here and was willing to just get in line for once and just and do what people said they did around here. I had dropped out of multiple community colleges all over the country, ran away from jobs and responsibilities and relationships, and when the going got tough, it's like, I got going, you know? I was the person, and I can still very much be a contrarian. My wife has recommended that I join a debate club or something, just have some sort of outlet for that. You know, I like to push buttons, I like to stir, you know, I like to, can I cuss?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm gonna try not to anyway, but I just wanted to make sure. I don't know if I'm spiritually out of place where I cannot cuss for 45 minutes while I talk about myself. But I like to stir up shit with people, you know? And, criticizing religion and reading all the, you know, atheist books and talks and just, like, anything anybody was doing, you know, is just, like, trying to pick it apart and, you know, it's like having jobs or getting married or paying taxes or, you know, going to college or, you know, participating in life, all these things. It's just like, you know, I was quick to criticize and, it is just an amazing gift and miracle that I came here and was willing to just start doing what people said they were doing. And, you know, recently I've been having this experience. I don't know if it's because live meetings are kind of going back, but I heard a... I don't know if it was a lead or a talk or what, just somebody's lead the other day. And it's just like, for the first time, kind of having these feelings where it's like, yeah. Like sponsorship, God, like steps, participating, middle of the herd. Like great, you know, he had a great talk, good pitch, but it's like, you know, just the same old thing over and over and over again. And, and that's what we got here. You know, I try not to reinvent anything. And I have a lot of wild, awesome ideas. And, you know, and luckily I haven't really followed any of them through too much. I'm from Alexandria, Virginia, originally. I grew up in an alcoholic home for years in sobriety, and certainly before I got sobriety, it was like the last 48 hours episode, or, you know, it's like I had this, you know, a lot of my story and going through inventory for the first time was really understanding the difference between, like, this idea of, like, real or fancied. I had a lot of stuff that was fancied that was going on in my head. And a lot of these things I told myself or subconsciously told myself because I just didn't understand what was wrong with me. It was really hard before I started drinking or when I was a kid when people would ask me, like, what's wrong with you? Like, what's going on? And it's like, I don't know. You know, it's like, I just eat dirt and I'm wild and... And I'm just a kid, like, you know, it's like I didn't even have the capacity to understand what that even meant. And I'm not saying anything was necessarily wrong, but it's, for a long time, drinking gave me the liquid courage to not feel, dishonest about just, like, feeling like crap about myself all the time. It's like, I knew people that had, like, really horrible stuff that had happened to them while they were growing up. And it's like, it made sense that they acted out. And I didn't have anything like that. And there was a lot of guilt that I kind of struggled with for feeling so, like, depressed and, you know, whatever that thing is that I have talked to a lot of other alcoholics. They seem to kind of have the same thing, but just, you know, the maladjusted, discontented, you know, all these things. It's like, I didn't have anything that I could point to where it's like, that's why I feel like this. And, you know, drinking drowned that out for me. And, you know, I don't think that's what makes me an alcoholic or what made me drink, but, you know, I'm a self-absorbed guy. Quite a few people have asked, like, oh, are you nervous? You know, what are you going to talk about? And it's like, you know, it's like certainly a little nervous, but, you know, there's one, if there's only one topic I could pick to talk about for the rest of my life, you're looking at it, right? And so, you know, it's like just try to focus on hopefully being helpful to the new person, or maybe, you know, for everybody in their first 30 days or in their last 30 days, like hopefully I can say something that might make some sort of impact with those people. And welcome to everybody that's new. Welcome to everybody from Fresno and thereabouts. And I heard San Diego there as well. And for a second, I was like, did I do something wrong in Fresno? Is that why? It's Alcoholics Anonymous. How do they know I'm here? Carla, thank you for your talk. I am a liar, a cheat, and a thief, like many of us are here. I also had very much of a safety net growing up as well. And so a lot of the things that I was trying to manipulate and get from people is their attention, their respect, their love, their pity, mostly just their, you know, I want the eyes on me, you know, and I had various tools that I was able to use to be able to manipulate those things out of people. But in the same way that, you know, the cash register honesty or dishonesty, it's like I had like the emotional and like social dishonesty. And I was a person who, it seemed to me, but I don't know, I hear about, to me, I thought it was a long time before I started to drink. It was between the summer of junior year and senior year, and there was a lot of people that started like drinking and doing drugs, you know, and just doing what teenagers and high schoolers do. And a lot of my identity was tied with, you know, I don't need to like to be creative or to have fun or to have relationships with people. It's like, I don't need to do that stuff. You know, I don't need the drink to have fun. And, you know, it's so much of my identity was really tied into like, I never want to be like my father. I don't want to treat people the way he treats my mother and he treats me. And I might not have had the words to really the understanding to really get what that meant, but it's like, I just didn't want to be like that. And I associated a lot of things around alcohol about being a drunk or being an Alcoholics Anonymous. A lot of it was through the lens of what I had seen with my father. And, you know, I didn't have the X's on my hands. Like, I was critical of those people as well, right? But it's like, it was all about not having to drink or use drugs until the first time I drank, right? You know, and all these philosophical and moral convictions out the window, hospitalized in my first month of drinking, alcohol poisoning. And like many alcoholics, it's like 100 or zero, you know, and my whole life shifted into, you know, doing what we do. And there was like a lot of fun and a lot of chaos and a lot of craziness, and then, you know, hence a lot of like running away. And for me, a lot of it was like being able to run away to like my mom's house, you know, coming back to like being able to have that safety net. You know, it's just wild to think of it. You know, there's the could happens, or I guess, so, you know, a lot of the yets. You know, I've been in the hospitals, I've been arrested, I've had DUIs, I've had to call weekly to see whether I need to come in or not. And, you know, for a long time, I knew that Virginia was the problem and being outside of DC, like many of us. And as soon as I could get out of there, it was just like stifling my individuality and creativity. And it's just like the bustle of people having careers and doing, you know, successful things, or, you know, productive things within society, or maybe unproductive, but, you know, just participating. It's like, if I could just get out of there, like, things would be okay for me, you know? And I ended up in San Diego, and a couple years into being in San Diego, what my life looked like was I was growing weed legally in my basement. I was working for a medical marijuana collective that was, like, really popular around, you know, 2010, 2011. It was like the way to, I'm assuming the laws are the same up here, it's all California, but, you know, it was that time where it's like, if you have a card, you know, then you're good. And, you know, and we had a storefront and gas lamp on 6th Avenue in downtown San Diego. and we would sell out of the store, and I would ride my bicycle around all day and just sell weed. Legally. Virginia, like, eat your heart out. And I'm a drummer. Played drums, you know, from a very, very young age. It's playing and recording and touring around, and it's like, you know, and I'm living the life. I'm in, like, great shape because I'm riding my little bike around and just playing drums all the time, and there's still that hole that I ran away from in Virginia, you know? And, you know, it felt like it should... It felt like it should have been this, like, I have arrived moment, and, you know, and it's like I'm still just miserable. I'm still, you know, I've caused trouble, you know, and you know, I'm a pretty messy drunk, but it's like I am the guy that kind of gets thrown out of bars for crying, because it's like a bad look. They're like, people don't want to be here when you're crying at 3 o'clock in the afternoon at the bar. Like, we know you tip well with your mom's money. We're not 86ing you, but, you know, it's like, come out from underneath the pool table and come back whenever, you know? And a lot of, like, in the bush, you know? I started having these experiences where, you know, early in my sobriety, my sponsor asked me if I was, like, a morning drink person. And I didn't think I was, and so I told him that I wasn't, you know, and again, in my head, I had this idea that the morning drink person means that you have, like, a bottle, you know, hopefully not broken, like, in your pillow or something, and you wait, and when your eyes open, you take that drink, and then you get going, right? And a few months into my sobriety, he had to explain to me that if the first thing I do when I wake up is I walk to the corner store and buy a pack of cigarettes in an energy drink, in an airline bottle, and pour that into the energy drink, and that's how I start my days, that, you know, maybe it's not exactly what a morning drink is, but it's like, we're looking at more or less the same thing here, you know, and there's a lot of, like, ideas that I had to let go of about, you know, about what alcoholism was, and about, you know, just what my relationship with life is, like, should or could look like. I was here in San Diego for a while. I'd gone back to Virginia. I was put on federal probation for getting a DUI on federal property, which I don't recommend. It's like pull off the federal road and just let them arrest you in the state. That is a lot easier to deal with. And that was my first exposure as far as for me with Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I had to do counseling. I had to do, like, group therapy. I had to go to A&A classes. I had to pee in a cup once a week for a year, and I had a map of where I was allowed to go, and that's when I had first experienced Alcoholics Anonymous, and there was, it's called the Serenity Club on Richmond Highway in Alexandria, Virginia, and those were, like, the first meetings that I at least remember going to, and I remember that there was, like, people that, like, wanted to ask me a bunch of questions that I didn't really want to answer. You know, I still very much kind of had this, like, idea that it's kind of like a mistake that I'm here. And, you know, and really I didn't understand why people didn't think I was such a good kid for, like, showing up to get my AA slip signed, you know? It's like, when I first met my probation officer, it was like my probation started on the 15th. And so the 14th, these are my ideas, right? I'm gonna party my ass off, do all the drugs, get wasted, lose my mind. And then the next day, I'm gonna show up to probation, ready to go. No drinking, no drugs. Cause I'm such a good kid, right? And he was like, you know, and we met, and he was like, we're gonna drug test you today. It's like, this is a perfect opportunity to be honest with this guy. Start off this relationship great. And when I explained to him what I more or less explained to you guys without going through the list of what was going to be dirty on my drug test, he just couldn't get it. I mean, maybe he could, you know, as somebody that works with, you know, I guess if you, you know, it's like in my idea, it's like we're starting this relationship great. I'm being honest. I'm sober today, you know, or at least I haven't taken anything today. And, you know, and I violated on my first day of probation. You know, and I was so offended and pissed I really was for basically the whole time, you know, and it's like, these types of, you know, it's like, I guess this is an example of me thinking that the rules don't apply to me or, but it's just like, I have these ideas on how I'm showing up and they just do not map on to where like society is expecting me to show up or where decency is expecting me to show up. And, you know, a lot of these different, it's like, it just was like so mad. And so that was the first experience that I'd had since I had started drinking, not having a drink. I wasn't supposed to drink for a year and I made it 8 months. And a huge part of that was taking Unisom sleeping pills because you don't pee dirty on them. And like, I had to do something to be able to shut this thing off when I went to bed, you know? And it was about 8 months in that I realized like, well, if I don't have to go in on Friday, like I'm never gonna go in on Saturday. So Friday night's okay. And we all know what happened, right? Friday night turns into Tuesday. And I don't know if it's a blessing or not, but I did make it through the rest of that without violating again. And for, you know, whatever that is. But the important thing for that is, especially when I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had had a window of my life where I got to look like what the alcoholic looks like when I'm not treating my alcoholism. You know, I kind of have two options, at least that I found that work well for me to treat my alcoholism. And it's alcohol, which works great. You know, it's just a lot of chaos. We're Alcoholics Anonymous. And that was really important for me. And this is something that I try to highlight with people that are new or people that I've worked with and try to find, like, do you have experiences of what you look like when you're godless and drinkless? And is that an option for you moving forward? And for some people, I don't know whether if I had not had that time, whether I would have needed that time or not, but it certainly helped me to be able to understand, you know? Eating like 10, 12, 15 Unisoms a night sucks. There's this weird, gritty feeling. Oh, the next day, it's like, am I jittery? Am I not jittery? It's like, yuck. Sometimes I see them in the store still, and I'm just like, oh. I steer away from any like type of sleeping type of stuff now, just personally. I'm in San Diego, I'm riding my bike, little BMX bike, 20 inch, you know, I'm like 25 years old. I look like this basically, but without a suit on, right? And I'm bar hopping all day long. And I'm selling weed, and then at night I'm playing drums or practicing or recording, you know, and what started happening is that I would wake up in the morning, you know, at like 10 or whatever, and somebody would want me to come downtown and they wanted to pick up, and I would ride my bike downtown. I'll be like, okay, I'm gonna, you know, head back up the hill. And it's like I'm watching myself in a movie, and it's like I'm riding to the same bar that I go to just about every morning. And I'm like, just go back up the hill, just go home, you know, grab a California burrito, like drink the booze you have at home, like smoke the endless amounts of weed you have at home. You know, you can come back to the bar later. And I ride to the bar. I'm like, you don't need to go in there. And I'm locking my bicycle up to the little pay meter, you know, and I'm like, you know, just smoke a cigarette and then just head back up. And I walk into the bar. I'm like, I don't need to have a drink right now. I can wait until later. They already know what I drink. They already saw me coming. They're already giving me a drink, you know? And it's like I'm watching a movie. It's like the horror movie. It's like the scene in every single horror movie where you're like, don't split up, don't go in there. Like, you know, it's like, how have you not seen enough horror movies not to know not to do what you're about to do? Which it's like how, it's like in this reality of the movie, are there no horror movies where you know, and it's like, I'm literally just repeating the same thing over and over and over again. And, you know, these types of things have what helped me. And, you know, and it's going through the big book. It's talking with a sponsor. It's listening to other people. It's, you know, understanding what my relationship with is, what my relationship with alcohol is, that I started to understand that these are the things of like what being powerless is. I thought being powerless over alcohol meant like the things that I do once I'm wasted. Like I'm powerless not to drive my car drunk. Or, you know, when I smash my father's car with a sledgehammer. Like, that's what being powerless over alcohol is, right? I didn't understand this whole thing about like, being powerless to, like, not drink. Like, there's, you know, Carla had said, and I love, you know, this idea of, like, being beyond human aid. And that's like me, that's my mom, that's the girlfriends, that's the, you know, the bosses, that's the people I work with, that's my friends, you know, that's my probation officer, that's the federal government. It's like all of these things, it's like I'm beyond those things being able to help me, because when push comes to shove and I'm thirsty, it's like one way or the other, either I talk myself into a drink or I like come to and it's like, and I've been drinking. And, you know, that's one of these old ideas that had to be smashed for me, right? What being powerless over alcohol meant. It's not, you know, and I guess you could argue that like the things that you do when you're drunk, you know, certainly like I'm powerless to also stop drinking. I've read the Big Book a lot. And as far as I can tell, the closest thing to like a direct definition of what alcoholism is at the beginning of We Agnostics, right? If you find when you want to, you cannot quit entirely, or you have little control over the amount that you take, you're probably an alcoholic. I'm probably an alcoholic. Because both of those things, it's like checkmate. That's me, right? And, you know, this going through the literature and going through the steps, I got to learn about this idea of like the obsession that comes beforehand. And like what the obsession looks like for me is really just as a certain amount of time goes by, I've realized how much other people have overreacted. Or I realize how much I had overreacted. And more or less, that's you know, there's always this kind of constant, like, I mean, I've played the game of being mad scientist and just the right amounts of this and that, and, you know, dry goods and, you know, or, you know, herbal goods and, you know, different liquids and... But not a ton of my drinking really looked like trying to like drink like a gentleman. There's not many times that I've ever drank like a gentleman, or that anyone would have said that I was drinking like a gentleman. It's like, I can't drink like a gentleman, can't smoke coke like a gentleman. Like, I can't really do those things too well. And I had lived with a congressman for a year and been a little bit in those circles and drank in suits at places that are really nice. And I can't drink like a gentleman. And it's like a lot of these things I just couldn't or wouldn't understand until I was in enough pain to try to do something different. The end of my drinking was a lot of like waking up in the park, spooning my bicycle, like peeing my pants like on purpose and on accident. You know, just depending on who I'm with. You know, I had someone who had asked me, he said, like, I'm just sitting downtown, like on a building, like my legs kind of like in my bicycle, but like I'm sitting against the wall, and this guy comes by, he's like, Damien? I was like, yeah, what's up? And he's like, you know, we're kind of chit-chat, and he's like, are you okay? Like, you, like, are you homeless? Like, what's, you know, what's going on? And it's like, and I have a place to sleep. And, you know, and I'm just fine, you know, it's like, I wish the strange places that I was waking up also included strange people, you know? It's like, it's not too much of my story where I'm waking up and it's like, oh, like, her and I went home, huh? It's, you know, it's like very, very weird places. And the girl, and I had an inkling at this point of my drinking and of my life that there was something weird going on. I had a woman that I dated tell me that she thought that I was allergic to alcohol. And I actually have never asked her whether she knew what that meant as far as in terms to Alcoholics Anonymous, but she's just like, something happens. And she's like, you know, I had a lot of relationships end like this. I had a lot of long-term relationships, and there's like a couple different things that like looking back that I've noticed. It's like that the women that I'm with are like, you know, more and more on my level, I guess is the way I'll put it, right? You know, to be able to put up with what I was doing. And all of them were like, it's not an issue of not liking you or not loving you. It's like, I just can't do this. Like, it's just too much, you know? Which was great for me, because then I get to take that to the next woman, and I'm a victim, and no one understands, and how can they do this to me, and like, you know, how could they give up on me? And I started to see when I did inventory that it's like this weird, like, Christopher Nolan Inception thing that's going on with my second and my fourth column. You know, the reason that, you know, I'm upset at you for not being there for me is like, you know, that I just take on to the next relationship. And I don't see that my mistake is first, like, you're judging me and treating me like based on my behavior. And it's like, and I'm using it as a tool to take to the next person to try to get the pity or the attention or whatever it is. And people don't really like that, you know? And then you, like, you know, pour alcohol and drugs on that, and it's just like, it gets messier and messier as you keep going. And, you know, my last drunk, I had gone on a date with this girl that I had been seeing for a little bit. It wasn't like super serious. And we were at a bar. She wanted to meet at a bar. And I had already kind of explained to her that it's like, you know, I'm trying to, you know, don't really want to drink too much. It's like, I may, you know, have a thing with drinking. And she's like, you should get drunk. We should get you drunk. And it's like, and we're both kind of laughing, both for entirely different reasons. It's like, all I want is for that to be what happens, and it's all I don't want, you know? And there's this, I didn't really realize there was a chain, but there's this place called the Yard House. Yes. My last drunk started at the Yard House in downtown San Diego. And I come back and they call it the Yard House because that cup that you are supposed to drink Slurpees out of at amusement parks, the big bong-looking one, I come back and I have a yard to drink. And, you know, and then it's like, and then it just starts, you know? And 3 days later, I woke up in Solano Beach in the back of my Jeep with self-inflicted burn marks all over my body. And it's just like, what is going on? What happened? You know? And it's like, so, you know, I shit my pants while her and I are out. And then she has to physically restrain me from jumping out of her parents' apartment building, which is in downtown San Diego. And, you know, funnily enough, or, you know, there's a meeting called White Flag that meets in Embarcadero Park at Seaport Village. And it's out, like, right where, I don't know, all the military ships are. And there's, like, a little touristy area right there. And you can see the building from where that meeting takes place. And so anytime I'm at that meeting, I used to frequent that meeting a lot. But it's certainly anytime I go back now, I'm like, that's the building right there, you know. And, you know, next day, I don't know, I'm sure crying, I'm sure calling people and trying to get attention, yeah, hear me out, you know, this and that, you know, probably hung out with Ernie. He was a homeless guy that was at our burrito shop right around the corner. I had bought Ernie a lot of burritos with my mom's money over the years, and he would listen to me, you know. Ernie was cool people. My roommates and bandmates at that time in my life were like, if we come home and Ernie's on the couch, it's like a problem. That's a line that has been crossed. No Ernie staying here. You know, and for some reason, that morning in the back of my Jeep, like, something different happened to me. I met with my boss at the time, you know, my drug dealer. And he invited me to go with his girlfriend to go out in the water. And I'm not a water person. The beach is great. It's just, like, great for you. And they had, like, a little, like, kid floaty, like, little donut. And I'm just, like, laying in the water, and I'm looking up at the sky, and the salt water's, like, hitting all my burn marks. And I didn't have, like, some burning bush moment. I don't remember, like, asking God, why? Like, help me. But for some reason, I went to my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. I don't know if it was that night or if it was the next day. Like, I'd had some experience around it before. And I went to a meeting where it was a Tuesday night speaker meeting, and the guy told his story. It's like a 45-minute talk. And this guy named Mark, he's great. And he had a crazy story. I mean, if only I should have just told Mark's story too. But, you know, it's like, he's like badass and, you know, he's, I don't even know what the style is, but he like ended up working for like a haircut place. So he's like suspenders and like the old car and like really sharp haircut and hard part. He has a gun tattooed right here, pistol right on the side of his head. And, you know, and he just, and he had a wild, he had the type of story that someone who has a gun tattooed on their forehead has. And as he told his story, like it, you know, it's like some of the things I could identify with, and some of the things it's like, yeah, I'm that badass, you know, me, you know, snot bubbles crying at the bar, you know, it's like, yeah, I can relate, you know, but the stuff around being like powerless around the drink and seeing how it's like that was taking over his life and the way he was acting and the way he was feeling, it's like, I, you know, it, again, at the time I had no idea that I was identifying, but he said that his home group was Thursday nights in Little Italy, and they met at 7:15, and I went to sobriety on state and date, which is still my home group, and that night, a man approached me, you know, who had a spiritual set of tools, you know, and he knew a little bit about himself and what alcoholism means, and the next week when I came back to that meeting, he remembered my name, and he remembered the name of the girl who's, you know, date I ruined by shitting my pants, and, you know, and that man became my sponsor, and that's, you know, Pete walked me through the steps, and Pete got sober in D.C. in a very big group that is in D.C. that is similar to the very big group that is in L.A., and lots of people have different opinions about that group, as do I. But I feel really blessed that I got this weird, like, militant, rigid sobriety, but not within a group like that. I still a little bit, but certainly then just needed to be told what to do. And the gift that, you know, I've kind of alluded to and talked about already is that I was willing to just do these things. Get three commitments, you know, call me every day, go to meetings, and we're going to, like, start going through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and I went on tour with the band that I was with in my first 30 days sober, and early in my sobriety, I went to a meeting every day, at least one, while I was on tour, and it was really good for me because I got to see that Alcoholics Anonymous isn't just like the weirdos down at the clubhouse, you know? I got to go city to city to city. It's like people are all doing the same thing, you know? Like I said, it's like steps, God, like help other people. It's like, what else is there really, you know? And there is a lot more that sobriety has given me, but, you know, it, as far as, like, what it takes, you know, I certainly didn't manufacture or create the willingness, and that's why I kind of view it as a gift that I'm willing to, like, keep on showing up. And, you know, a lot, my sponsor was very, like, strict and, like, rigid with me, but, like, in this weird way. His trick is that he would say, like, if I was late to a meeting, my sponsor would have ripped me a new one, and yada, 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 and it's so disrespectful. You can't even show up to a meeting on time. Like, how are you going to show up to anything else, you know? And it was always through the lens of, like, how his sponsor would have reacted to him when I'm doing these things, you know? And it's like, ah, I'm in trouble, but it's like, it's not getting directed at me, I guess. But, you know, he's just, for better or for worse, he has these ideas on what Alcoholics Anonymous is supposed to look like. And, you know, and for better or worse, these things have translated over to me. For years of my sobriety, I'm the guy that's like, I want to know who sponsors you so that I can judge them, you know? And I think, you know, the earlier me in sobriety would probably be very critical and very judgmental of what my sobriety looks like today. And that's, you know, there's been this interest, you know, we've had an interesting last 2 years, I'll call it, you know? And how am I doing on time? I have 11 minutes? Okay. I do want to read out of the big book in case any of this other stuff is just complete garbage and doesn't make sense. So at least you can get something, right? It's only in the 164. Faith without works was dead, he said, and how appallingly true for the alcoholic. For if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. And I think we've all gone through a weird certain trial and low spot over the last 2 years, you know? And I'm sure we all have people that, for whatever reason, are not sober tonight. And early on in my sobriety, it's about a year and a half, my mother was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And we were told that she was gonna have 3 to maybe 12 months to live. And I'm Mr. AA with my year and change. And, you know, I gotta figure out who's gonna take over all these commitments and how's my home group's gonna survive. And I ended up moving back to Virginia and, you know, to take care of my mom. It's like, this is, you know, my living amends. You know, to be able to show up and be a son for once. And, you know, and it's like all this like legal stuff, all this medical stuff. It's like, I'm way out of my element and somehow I'm the one everybody's looking to, right? And, you know, and I just get these ideas about how important I am and my role in life. And I can go off the beam so easily. And I think I might be a little bit off the beam in this segment of my life right now. I dare not look or talk about it too much, but that's my little bit of honesty about what I am. But, you know, I was gonna go back to Virginia. I was gonna stay sober, do the certain trials and those spots ahead. My mom dying, the mama's boy, mom dying. Gonna be a good example to my younger brother. I'm gonna show him that, you know, we're gonna be all right. I'm gonna be there for him. All my, you know, my squad back in San Diego, not gonna let them down. Gonna show all those AAs there. What happens when we lean on God and AA and stay in the middle of the herd and, you know, and stay of service and ask God what he would have us be, you know, and I'm going to be that, you know, and Virginia, thank God I'm coming because like once I'm there, like whatever weird stuff has happened with the group where we can't help newcomers or like no women come to the meeting or like whatever issues we're having, like we're going to be of service and we're going to show everybody how to do this thing, and, you know. And she's gonna die, and I'm just gonna continue on, and it's gonna be hard. Everybody will be there for me, and we'll stay sober and do AA. And what started to happen is that my mother is now, let me think, it's 2014, somewhere in there, and it's 2022. My mom's still alive. I have to make sure to say that she hasn't passed because that's like still my way of like, oh, like, sorry, your mom passed. Like, she's still alive. You know, it was like 13 months into her after her being diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. We start to realize that she's not going to die. Like, she's going to live. She had this weird surgery. She went to, you know, a place out in Milwaukee at Frederick Hospital. And there was like a doctor that, you know, only did this type of surgery that came from MD Anderson, you know, and yada, 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 all this stuff. And all of a sudden, it's like, I've hit a problem. My story is that we don't have to drink no matter what. Like, mom dies, I stay sober, I'm an example here to Alcoholics Anonymous, and like, thank God we have AA. You know, and it's through this that I really got to see where I can turn anything into being all about me. To the point where it's like I'm literally upset that my mom's not gonna die. I mean, it's gonna be terrible for me if she, you know, it's like, why would I even want that? And, you know, and it's like, and it just, you know, and it's like I've had these different types of pills of humility that I've had to swallow throughout my sobriety and, you know, and just try to keep on showing up. It's like, I still have commitments. I still go to meetings. I've had an issue with like being like visible and available within Alcoholics Anonymous. And I could give you a bunch of excuses that would have everybody completely on my side. But it's like, I haven't sponsored any guys in a while, you know, and I've had the privilege of being able to take people, you know, up to page like, you know, 62, many of those guys. And I've had other people that I've been able to take through the process of the steps, and some of them have stayed sober, and one of them has stayed sober at this point. Some of them have obviously not. And, you know, and so the big thing I'm trying to focus on, you know, my life is great. Like, you know, it's like I teach drums, I play drums in a bunch of different bands. My wife and I have, you know, bounced around the country a little bit, and we own property in San Diego now. I've gotten married to someone that I met in the rooms in my first year. You know, I know the book says don't date within your first year, but, you know, I've been able to, you know, keep my focus on, like, being a service, you know, this idea of the circle and the triangle, right? We have unity, recovery, service. It's like, I've been able up to this point to at least keep some of those things in place, to have that circle around us, which is the defense against the first drink, you know? My ideas around what a higher power is, what a higher power is and looks like, have changed a lot. I'm not gonna, you know, if anybody wants to know what it is for me, I'll tell you after the meeting. I think it's weird when people talk about it from the podium, but, you know, and I've been able to, like, just elevate to a life that I didn't know was possible for me. I'm not one of these people that got sober and then, like, got my life back or, like, got back on track, you know. I failed to launch, never really had anything, didn't really ever have to work for anything, didn't have to follow through, you know. And it was like the pain that was going on in my head and I guess in my heart and emotionally, but it's like, you know, I reached a pain point there because it's like, once I started drinking, it's like I had the house where my mom was like, here's $300, here's what I want. Like, and everybody should just do whatever they're gonna do here because like, you're gonna do it anyway, so you might as well be sick. You know, I had the party house and the party mom and you know, and it's like, I could just do what I wanted, you know? It's like, I didn't have to sacrifice things that I know some people have to sacrifice in order to keep the drink flowing, you know? And that's totally a blessing for me. And I guess that opportunity is still always out there for me. But being able to come in here and have an experience going through the work, you know, I don't know that I've talked about it enough, but it's like the steps are where it's at, you know? I mean, just watch the people here in Alcoholics Anonymous. Everybody's a teacher. There's a lot of people that regularly teach us what to do to get drunk again. And they kind of do the same things. Like, they don't participate, they don't do the steps, they won't believe in a God or try to believe and, you know, pretend to want to believe or what, you know, it's like, there's these normal things that most people that haven't had their last drink yet do. And then there's, you know, there's a decent amount of us that kind of do these same things. They get busy, they move their feet, they stay in the middle of the herd, and those are the people that are teaching me how to stay sober. And luckily, I've been able to do more of the things that are what people do to stay sober than doing the things that, you know, people do to get drunk. And hopefully I can continue to be an example of that in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I try to say yes. I try not to get too far out ahead of myself. My wife said something funny recently, talking about somebody else, but I think I'm doing this a little bit right now. It's like, sorry I haven't been around, guys. I'm too busy dealing with the promises in my life. You know, I am in a point in my life where that's what's happening, and you know, that willingness, like I said, I don't really know how to manufacture it, but I stay close. I still have the same sponsor. You know, I have people that I know that I can call. I am surrounded and have like people that are supportive of me that are in and outside of the program. And it's been a long time since I woke up in the morning and argued with myself about whether I was gonna drink. It's been a long time since I've had that thirst that, I mean, we all know that thirst, right? You know, and it's like, depending on what year of my life it is, it's like that thirst can only be quenched by 211 Steel Reserve, you know, or Newcastle's, you know, or, you know, bag of wine. Like, get it out of that box. Like, the awesome, the perfect mobile, for the, you know, for the drinker on the go on the bicycle, you need the bag of wine. You know, that's the only thing that could satisfy that thirst, and I just haven't had that thirst in a long time. I haven't had to win an argument about taking a drink. I don't win those arguments, you know, and so the more I can do to just not have that argument and to not have that thirst, I'm gonna keep on trying to do that, and it seems to be in Alcoholics Anonymous and you people and, you know, and a God of my limited understanding where I haven't had to live like that anymore. So with that, I will keep it pushing. Thank you guys so much for hearing me out tonight.
Another big round of applause for Damien.